This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's Wednesday, August 10th. I'm Patrick Johnston. Eric McKenzie, hello.
How are you?
Good. Good. Olympics. Are you Olympics out? Out? Olympics out?
No, not yet. I'm pretty pleased with the amount I've been able to take in over the first few days. Some of the best events are yet to come. So,
track.
Well, exactly.
Phelps isn't done yet. Should we lead with that discussion?
Yeah, we can talk
Usain
about that.
Versus Phelps. So I threw this question at you yesterday, and you know, obviously Michael Phelps now, what is it, 21 gold in his career? All in swimming, and in different kinds of swimming. So at a certain level, to go back to my earlier point, which I've made several times, I think, on this podcast, which is that, you know, the Olympics should just be about who's the best at whatever. And of course, Phelps winning 21 medals is also like team medals and also in a couple different disciplines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the end, it should be like just freestyle. Like, why do we have these other ones? Or butterfly, you know, whatever's the fastest, just do that. So with that in mind, though, you know, best swimmer of all time, no doubt about it.
I think that's a safe call.
Now, and then there's our pal Bolt, who's going for the double for the third time in a row. He could probably, if he really wanted to, probably do long jump. Probably, I mean, wasn't there a point early on in his career where they were talking about him running the 400 as well?
Yeah, I think so.
I think there was. There was sort of this notion maybe he would do 100, 200, 400, and it just wouldn't even be like he'd be without a doubt the best sort of sprinter of all time, and there wouldn't, no one would ever touch him.
Yeah.
And it kind of prompted me on the discussion. Okay, so they're both clearly on the, and Steve and I mentioned this yesterday, they're both clearly on the list. They're on the Mount Rushmore of greatest all time Olympians. Now, there are other people that belong in there. And of course, you know, it's difficult to compare eras. But when we talk about the two of them, who is the greater Olympian?
I think we need to see what Bolt does later these games before we can decide that. But I have a hard time with this discussion to begin with. And it's because, like you mentioned, it's different for every athlete in the way that they can actually go about winning their medals. I mean, it's when Michael Phelps has a chance to win multiple medals in the space of an hour, like he does on some nights swimming. I mean, there are others that will, their chance, how many other Olympians get one chance at one medal every 4 years? So I have a hard time with this greatest Olympian discussion because it is, like you said, difficult to compare eras and it's difficult to compare sports. And how if you want to use medal counts solely as your only measure of greatest Olympian, then sure, Phelps is your winner. But I don't know that that's necessarily the best way to judge best Olympian. And I mean, we were talking about this last week too. I mean, look at, what about like athletes that have competed in the winter and summer games and medaled in both games? Does that not count as a great Olympian as well? Just to be able to focus their efforts into two different sports, two different seasons. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could go about defining what makes the greatest Olympian. So if it's just medals, sure, it's Phelps. But
the Richard Deitch podcast had a couple interesting guests, both related to this discussion before the Olympics. He talked to Otto Bolton, who's the NBC lead analyst, and of course, sprinting rival of, you know, to Donovan Bailey, for instance, and he also talked to I'm drawing a blank now, Rowdy something or other. He's the swimming analyst for NBC. And in similar sort of circumstances, he didn't ask them to say who's who, but you know, they both had interesting points. The thing about the Bolden race, which was interesting, which was that, or that Deitch asked Bolden, which was that historically it was the decathletes who got the most play in the U.S. I mean, Bruce Jenner, for instance. I mean, the Dan versus Dan rivalry from, you know, the early 90s. There was, you know, who is the America's best athlete, and to be able to do 10 sports that are so different, massively harder than modern pentathlon.
Yes.
To me, that again, I mean, that is the sport, isn't it? I mean, that's the challenge, is being able to do all these things. And of course, when it comes to Bolt, I mean, he's a specialist, but I think we know that Bolt is such an incredible athlete. He would probably do amazingly well in a whole bunch of different things.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, could you imagine him playing, I don't know, football? Like, could you imagine him as like a wide receiver or a tight end or something?
He would be insane.
Amazing, yeah. Right? Could you, I mean, who knows what Phelps, I mean, Phelps could play football, right? With those arms.
I'm sure he could.
Right? His lungs, like just the physical ability. They've ended up in a particular discipline where they're perfect, but there's no doubt they could do really well at other things.
Oh, of course.
So that to me is the other one, is it kind of, you know, that decathlon used to be the one that everyone said, well, he's the greatest greatest athlete currently living, but nobody talks about decathlon anymore.
It's true. I wonder why it's kind of faded off the map that way.
Well, this is the other point that Bolden made, which was interesting, because Deitch asked him, what is the... It was funny. I found myself thinking along the same lines of, we constantly talk about, what's the post-Sedin's Canucks universe going to be like? What is the post-Bolt sprinting universe going to be like? And Bolden's answer was really interesting. He pointed out that, if you actually think about it, the era pre-Bolt, so you go, say, 2004, because he competed in Beijing in 2008, the era before Bolt was highly competitive. That Bolt actually, the deal with Bolt is that nobody's been able to rival him. And that you talk about 20 years ago, for instance, the 96 games in Atlanta when Bailey won, and you list off the guys that were considered to be possible winners. I mean, Bailey had won the world championships, but by no means was he the prohibitive favorite.
No.
You know, Linford Christie was, I think, if there was a favorite, it might have been Linford Christie, but there's Dennis Mitchell, there's Bruni Sorin, there's Frankie Fredericks, there's Bolden. You know, that's six guys right there, or five guys right there. You know, the question now is, can Justin Gatlin catch up to Bolt? And it will probably take an error by Bolt and, you know, Gatlin, who's been running really well, Gatlin's best ever run. But other than that, it doesn't seem like anybody's really that close.
No.
So you take Bolt out of the equation and all of a sudden becomes more competitive. I think the thing with the decathlon is that, first of all, it's not a high profile sport. And Usain Bolt has just sucked up all the promotion.
It's true. I mean, I think there's probably been more of a shift towards those marquee events, and the sprints have become really where all the eyeballs go. I mean, it's the easiest one for viewers to digest. First of all, it's a 10 second race.
You're the fastest man.
You're the fastest man in the world, as opposed to you're the best athlete in the world, because over the course of 10 events, you scored the X number of points. And decathlon is complicated too. There's that aspect of it too. That
the thing about it too it's an interesting, if you think about, obviously, there's been a lot of discussion about how to present the Olympics and a lot of criticism of NBC in the U.S. because they tape delay everything. They tell the stories. They don't show the events as much. It's, you know, they do make it available if you want to show the events, but most things are delayed. That in the old days when there was literally, you know, three channels to choose from and one of them had the Olympics, NBC got to decide, you know, or whoever was showing the Olympics got to decide, here's what the events were going to show. And so they showed the decathlon partly because the American was the best at it. You know, you talk about the 1970s and sprinting. Nobody really talks about anybody.
No.
You know, the modern sprinty glamour era starts with Carl Lewis, really, in 84 at LA, and Ben Johnson in 88, mm-hmm. and that rivalry and the whole drama that was. And 92, we sort of talk about, but really, I mean, the sprinting era is over the last 30 years. The decathlon was something of the 70s, and maybe it was just because Bruce Jenner was such an incredible athlete in his day, and they could show all the sports.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I mean, although to a certain extent, how much is NBC still doing that, deciding what the sports are? I mean, I guess it's hard to ignore Michael Phelps when he's winning 25 medals over the course of a career. But I've spent a little bit of time last night watching their broadcast, and it's still so U.S. focused. So you see so little of of other teams.
Nobody could possibly beat them.
Yeah. I mean, you watch, they basically show like their gymnastics team goes straight through every rotation, and it's like, oh, well, they're waiting now, so I guess we'll show some of the other countries competing. You know, so they do play a big role in it, because I mean, as America goes, so goes you know, the so goes the a lot of the sporting discussion. And so to a certain extent, yeah, I think that the that NBC still has a little bit of pull that way, and that they decide what stories you hear and instead of showing the live coverage. But I guess what I mean though is that like the focus is going to go to the big stars, and so yeah, it's just, those are simple events, like the sprints are simple events to digest, and there hasn't really been I can't name more than like two or three decathletes and heptathletes between right. men and women's Grand events.
Neaton, that's yeah, my
that's
list.
About it. And that so I mean it's there just aren't the personalities there to sell decathlon and I guess the more obscure events that way.
The other thing that interests me, and I don't know if this is a chicken and the egg situation, but I suspect it could be. I look at obviously our metrics for what's being read, and we've decided Post Media as a chain, the decision was made that everything would be hosted on the National Post's website, that we put it all in one spot instead of spreading it all around, which I get. And then we've sort of filtered it out across the various websites. And it's worked. You know, people are going to read the stories. There's interest in these stories and they're doing very well. But the thing that's interested me the most is how where the readership has kind of peaked. And anything that involves sort of a Canadian win has done very well. You know, people that have been very visible. So Penny Oleksiak obviously there's been interest just in kind of that. But it's not a name recognition thing. It's kind of like, you know, the headline very much is about Canadians winning gold, you know, winning medals in the pool. And then the women's sevens, because that was a big win. It was a new sport and it was kind of an exciting way to do it. The women's soccer, because they're doing so well, but also the weird little bits and pieces, you know, sort of away from the actual competition. So the story about the diving pool turning green, which initially, you know, they said they weren't sure what was going on. They said the testing was fine. There was speculation maybe it was chlorine / temperature. I saw something this morning that maybe it actually is algae. Like, it's just all kinds of stuff. People were fascinated by that story because they looked at the picture like, what? And so people are interested in the bits and pieces and not as much about the actual, like, who won, who lost. Which I guess is, I mean, you got to know who won and who lost, and so you include it in the story. But people do seem fascinated with the unconventional and not what we kind of assumed, maybe used to assume was important. And certainly we're seeing that more and more that, like NBC at least says they're doing with their broadcasts, which is that they're like, more women watch our broadcast and they're less interested in the results. They want to see the stories, and people don't like that. That's what their claim is. People aren't happy about that rationale.
People aren't happy about it, but I absolutely buy that that's the case.
I can totally buy it.
I mean, it's
like, I mean, the metrics,
the Olympics, like target demographic is all of our moms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your mom. It's my mom. It's everyone's mom.
My mom loves watching the Olympics.
Yeah.
She isn't, and I think she likes to see the competition,
of
right?
course, but it's the stories of getting there and the sportsmanship and the perseverance and all those things that make it a great story that really makes the result almost insignificant in terms of to the fans' perspective anyway. Although, I mean, again, though, with NBC, I mean, with NBC, it's they're basically only showing you American victories with no context.
So. Which I think is a frustration.
Yeah.
I think the storytelling still needs to include the competition.
Yes.
And I think that's clear, because otherwise it's just a story and nobody knows. Well, nobody knows why they're reading it. People are reading it because it's the Olympics. What's the Olympics? The Olympics is the global competition for everything, right? That's why people get pulled into it. But it is important to note that there are all these other bits and pieces. So to come back to the original question, which was who's the greatest Olympian or what makes a great Olympian. And I think it's, to me, that's what really it is. What makes a great Olympian? Well, you know, Usain Bolt, who's probably the greatest sprinter in history, and Michael Phelps, who's probably the greatest swimmer in history. And that seeing someone win, it's bizarrely intoxicating. Can he do it again? Could he really do this again? And that's why people keep watching. What did you think of Phelps? He usually doesn't demonstrate at all, but we've seen quite a bit of DeMonster, especially with him and Chad DeClose. Wagging the finger and sort of bring it kind of thing after he won. What did you think about that? Yeah.
In general, there's been a lot more swagger to the swimming events this year just because of the personal rivalries. But yes, it's been a lot of fun to watch, to see a little bit more of the pool deck emotion from some of these, on both the men's and the women's side. So that has been that's sort of given it an extra bit of oomph.
It doesn't, honestly. Like, I mean, I know it pissed some people off, and some people are like, you know, have some class. But I'm like, come on, you know, he's won 21 times,
yeah,
and he's on the stage, and people are cheering for him. And I don't think he's. I mean, that's the most demonstrative we've ever seen him. Otherwise, he's just always been this aloof guy who's like, whatever. But this is his final Olympics, you know?
He's allowed to show a little emotion.
I think he's allowed to show a little emotion. You know, and he went and shook their hands. It wasn't like he disrespected them, but just got out and said, nah. The one thing I thought was interesting, though, and I think it might have been Piers Morgan that started it, but I saw Donovan Bailey put it up on his Facebook page, or whoever represents Donovan Bailey put it up on his Facebook page, which is, don't finger wag, America. You're cheaters, too. Which, I mean, the desire to be self-righteous when it comes to drugs and sport kind of drives me nuts. Like, I am pissed off that the Russians had a huge state-sponsored program to cheat. I'm glad that they've been punished to a degree. Should they have been punished more? Probably. But to walk around and say we're better than you, come on. Like, that's not why we're here.
Yeah.
And I think it is a bit of a false equivalence because, yes, Justin Gatlin did get caught. Justin Gatlin also served his suspension. Justin Gatlin also named names, which is, you know, I don't even know. You know, I think good for him, but he shouldn't have been doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
And as we've seen in American sport, if you apologize, you get off. That's the thing. I'm sorry. I mean, we've seen in baseball, right? The guys that they don't like in baseball, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, are the guys who haven't apologized. Mm-hmm. Andy Pettit, you know, even A-Rod, who sort of weirdly apologizes in his own way. People don't hate him because he took drugs. They just hate him because he's a jerk. Yeah, but they don't hate him as much as they hate Barry Bonds, you know, and Justin Gatlin apologized. So it's a non-story.
Marion Jones might be. She apologized too late.
Too late, after she went to jail.
Yeah.
Like, Marion Jones went to jail, which is the amazing part. And I suppose that's the other point, is like, hey, you guys got caught. But at the same time, is the difference the fact that the Russians basically have kind of, I mean, I don't feel like the Russians have run around and said, you guys are all screwing us, but the Russians haven't exactly apologized for what they did.
No.
Right? They're not like, ah, damn, you caught us. They're like, ah.
Discrimination.
Western media. I don't know. Is that, I mean, there's the whole China versus Australia thing, which I think is hilarious, but in the end, it's like, okay, let's go swim. I mean, is that really what we come down to? Let's go swim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so.
Who cares?
I think so. I mean,
is doping even an issue for you?
I mean, it's been too much of an issue for the last. At this point, I just want to enjoy the competition. And I mean, the IOC has made its bet on these doping decisions. So these are the games we've got now. And that's. Yeah, I mean, there will inevitably be athletes caught out of these games as well, which is the unfortunate thing. But I mean, realistically, realistically there will be more dopers caught. I mean, you're never going to eliminate it completely. But at this juncture, when we've got like what the 16 days we've got of the Olympics, I just want to enjoy the games and not have to get too much into the speculation.
Just out of interest, I went and looked at the National Post stats on our chart beat. The top two stories right now for sports anyway are the green water not bothering the Canadian divers, and BBC making homophobic remarks about some lesbian kiss, I believe.
Oh, great.
So yeah, people love scandal. That's what, or I don't know. People love things that are off color or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, especially with these games.
Off color?
Well, just in, there's been so much that's gone wrong with these games. It's so easy to, it's easy to gravitate towards the stories of disaster.
You know, I've talked to a couple of people that are down there, and you know, nobody on the record, but or nobody can at least tell me. You know, I can't say who they are, but and you know, the truth of the matter is that yes, like every Olympics, stuff has not worked the first time, mm-hmm. or stuff's been missing, but the Brazilians have fixed it. You know, the next day it's there. You know, some of the issues in the athletes' village were rather spectacular, but we haven't heard any more of them. They fixed them. And it kind of happens at every one of them. The thing for me, though, is again, looking at the huge expense put into a lot of these things. I mean, I'm glad to see, for instance, that the rugby stadium is a temporary stadium. Like, that's how you really should do it for most of these events.
Yeah.
I mean, the pictures, I think, is the baseball stadium in Athens. It's just, you know. Like,
well, any of those venues from the 2004 games, I mean, ridiculous. They've just been overtaken by nature.
But I'd say on the whole, things are working. The only thing, of course, disappointing is that, you know, ticket sales have been terrible. And I think it's worth discussing why that happened. I don't know. I don't know why. I assume it's probably because the ticket prices were too high and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's been a huge expense. I think people have enjoyed themselves. But in the end, once again, the Olympics are too big. What did you think of that Slate story saying that Vancouver should just host every Olympics permanently?
Oh, I didn't see that. That's not a not a bad idea.
Would you be happy? We could just set up there. There's our little, that would be our little niche thing to set up. We could have our own little Olympics website.
How about that?
An endless insider, and we could be endlessly sued by the IOC, I'm sure. What'd you think of the GIFs ban? It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, I saw that you were expressing your frustration over the GIF ban, and you and this very podcast have asked me to explain why they're important.
Because they help you tell the story.
Well, yeah, I was just surprised that you had.
It's driving me nuts. I didn't realize how much I care about.
Didn't know what you had until it was gone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No. To explain, the specific situation was that Jasso Viramalua, who is one of the most thrilling players on the Fiji rugby team, made this pass yesterday where he was absolutely getting clobbered. And it set up the winning score, I think, against Argentina. And it was a marvelous feat of skill. But because the way the rights stuff works, like CBC can share short videos because it's theirs. Right. But CBC's, I mean, they're showing the men's rugby, which to their credit on TSN in its entirety, and I think people are enjoying it. But that's not their focus. They're focused on Canadians, fair enough. So they haven't shared any clips like that. And World Rugby, which normally is all over stuff like that, isn't allowed to because they're not a broadcaster. They can share pictures and they can share little, they've made fun little graphics.
Right.
But yeah, I wanted to find this video and put it up and say, listen, this is awesome. Watch this. This is often my instinct, but I couldn't because it wasn't there. And there you go. I concede your point. They're massively important.
Yeah.
Stupid IOC.
They're going to be, I'm sure that will be a big part of negotiating rights in the future.
It's going to be, it is an interesting one because again, it's these little moments that people are fascinated by. And interestingly enough, in the end, the IOC wants you to watch their event. And I think at a certain level, to their credit, they're driving you to, this is the broadcast, watch the damn show.
Yep.
And at a certain level, I get that. I know that there was some notion, I think MLB originally, when they were trying to put in their ban 4 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever it was, said that they wanted to have a 48-hour blackout on those kinds. You could, after that time, you're allowed to use it.
Right.
And there was just, people are just like, that's stupid. And so then they themselves have taken over. Like, they produce their own little videos and GIFs and stuff, which I think people on the whole are okay with. But I don't know. It just seems to me like, do you want people talking about your sport? Like, this is how you build intense fandom. Maybe I don't know how you solve the problem. But.
Well, the other thing too is that you can't watch everything all at once when it comes to the Olympics. I mean, there's just too much going on. So I mean, if you're, but you can get those quick. If you could get those quick hit highlights, that would be really nice and convenient over social media. But
yeah,
that's obviously
frustrating.
Yeah, obviously missing.
Okay, last thing, we were talking about this. There was obviously a picture that's gone around. I think it was Germany versus Egypt in women's beach volleyball.
That's right.
And the Egyptian women, as we've seen, have a uniform which fits their religious code. And obviously the German women were wearing what we're used to seeing beach volleyball players, right, which is a little bikini. And it's drawn notice. The thing that was interesting to me, and I think you can explain this to me. So did they, I remember when they made the shift in volleyball, like indoor volleyball, and there was the highly controversial, basically saying, well, we want to show women's bums off better, basically, was the way I understood it. And they switched to these quite skimpy uniforms for court volleyball. And it was somewhat controversial. And then there was some, old men basically saying, well, we think it'll add sex appeal to the sport. And everyone was rightly up in arms at that point. And that was the uniform. But in beach volleyball, what is the uniform? Is it that you can wear whatever you want, or did they make an exception for the Muslim athletes?
No, they changed this before the 2012 Olympics, if I remember right. Is that there was that a two-piece swimsuit was kind of the standard was a standard uniform for women playing beach volleyball. But before the London Olympics, there were two thoughts behind changing it and making it so that you could basically wear whatever you want as long as it looks, decent.
Mm-hmm.
Was to respect the cultural beliefs of other countries who, right, maybe felt excluded from, mm-hmm, that. Because, and the other being that playing in London was probably going to be kind of chilly. So, right, maybe a bikini wasn't the most, didn't make the most sense. But that's been in place now for, this is the second games now where it's, okay, basically wear what you want.
Okay.
But yet there are still those criticisms out there of like, oh, well, beach volleyball is, it's basically just it's just objectifying the women. And I just don't agree with that at all, because if they have the choice of wearing what they want and they're still wearing bikinis, then that is their choice. And I have been seeing the arguments of like, oh, that's just the only reason is to ogle their bodies and that's it. But if even just a little bit of research and a little bit of listening to the athlete's perspective, they will tell you that that is the most functional thing for them to wear when they're on the court, because they don't have to think about it. It's hot outside.
Yeah.
Any extra fabric that they have is just going to lead to problems with sand getting stuck in their uniform. So it's a thing. It's function. There's nothing nefarious behind
it. I think it is in a way. I mean, obviously here we are two white dudes talking about this, but
yeah, that's true. But I come from, a volleyball background, and right, I could call up, six people right now and put them on the podcast that would agree with me.
What I would talk, I was going to point to is if you go down, for instance, what the heck's the tournament? It was on the weekend, Kits Fest or whatever they call it. It's got the big volleyball tournament.
Right.
And they're wearing bikinis. The women playing in that can choose, they can wear whatever they want. And that's what they're wearing.
Right.
Which they're not Olympians. Some of them might have tried to be Olympians in the past, and that's what they want to wear. So I don't know, that to me, that's pretty telling. To me tells the story.
It was the same thing even with indoor volleyball. I mean, my sister played, right, 5 years of CIS,
right,
volleyball, and every year it seemed like they'd get a visit from an idealistic reporter from the school paper,
right,
coming to interview them about the sexist tights that they were wearing.
Right.
And they were all, every time they'd be like, well, this is actually what we would most prefer to wear,
right,
because it's the most functional.
Right.
So, I mean, it's, I just find it funny that we have these debates without actually asking the players what they think.
Here's my only thing. I think observers are right to share their sense of morality about it. People can say, I feel uncomfortable watching this. And I think people need to be better at identifying what they themselves are feeling about it versus what they think other people should think about it. And to me, that is what's important to frame, is that I feel this way and here's why. It's not, don't use the word should. Avoid the word should. Women shouldn't wear these things because X. Well, okay, but is that you're at this point you're projecting. don't tell other people what they should think. Tell them what you think and try to convince them that it's the right position.
Right.
And as you said, I think that's the other thing. It's, you know, important to understand the people in the middle that you're commenting on have thoughts themselves. They're not always the easiest interview, as we've talked about many times before, but what do you think? You know, and as you said, you know, if your sister and her teammates were saying, listen, this is a uniform we like, and it actually is great to play in, end of story. People can exactly. project whatever they want.
And this hasn't been limited to volleyball either. I mean, I think I shared the article with you. I'd read yesterday that there was complaints that the Globe and Mail had run a full page photo of Canada's synchronized bronze medal winning synchronized divers.
What are they supposed to wear?
Yeah, what, like,
do they want them to go back to the 19th century where, like, I mean, basically the women would be diving in what the Egyptian volleyball players are wearing? I mean, okay, fine, people can do that, but.
And
there's a reason why they're wearing those bathing suits.
Well, and they're also like contorting their bodies into, you know, they need their maximum range of motion to pull off some of the moves that they're doing. So wearing more clothing is only going to hamper that. I found it really strange that those arguments still persist. I mean, I
don't find it strange. I don't find it strange, to be honest. Well, I'm not surprised. People are going to express their opinion. I just think, like I said, it comes back to how are you expressing your opinion? And like you said, have you done any research?
Maybe it's because the Olympics bring eyeballs that don't, that aren't usually on sports to sports for a few weeks a year. And so there is maybe that, there are those opinions that we don't normally see in the sports world that kind of get some attention, but it seems like we have the same arguments the same discussions every 4 years, and I just say let the athletes decide.
People are never going to be happy, Eric.
Really?
Just before we go, I will make a rugby related quick little side note on uniforms, because in the old days they were heavy cotton jerseys. Now they wear these incredibly tight, you know, super light, super modern, ultra fabric. I don't even know what they are made of. Stretchy in many cases, form fitting. I think it was the 2007, 2003 Rugby World Cup, one of those two, when they first were making the switch to these. 2003 was the first Rugby World Cup where they were wearing newer materials. I think 2007 was when they were going to make this huge switch. Nike, which was making the uniforms for France and England, wanted to create a basically unitard uniform, which would have been shorts and jersey all in one go. And there wasn't really anything in the rules that said they couldn't specifically, but they managed to, and they were going to do this. And World Rugby went and said, no, that's not what a uniform looks like. It's in the laws. It says shorts and jersey and socks. Like, that's what a player will wear.
Right.
And basically the fact that they listed three things was what kept them from having this basically rugby team wearing sprinter mock-ups, get-ups. And that, interestingly enough, you know, nonetheless, we still have ended up with these very skin-tight uniforms. And they're not – I don't hear anybody complaining about that one, even though they're obviously form-fitting and quite revealing in many cases. You know, that to me in the end is – That's the other side of the equation, was that, like, there should be what a uniform should look like. But in the end, the players like it. They like those short shorts, and nobody complains.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway. Good podcast.
Yeah.
What are you writing about this week?
I am writing about the Canadian men's volleyball team and the many years of frustration that followers of that team had, as they kind of came very close to the Olympics and fell short every time. But that win over the United States to open the games was
unbelievable.
It was unbelievable, but it was really, I think, for longtime observers of that team, it was a real bit of redemption for all of those years of disappointment. Right. Because although there was an upset win, if you watch volleyball at that top level, the teams that are in the top 20 in the world are all actually so close together, that any team can beat any other. So although it's been kind of described as a bit of like a shocking win over the U.S. to open that tournament. It wasn't, I don't think it was that shocking of a win for the people that know that team and that program. And, I think it was just a really nice way for the Canadians to kind of show that they really belonged at this tournament after a lot of years.
Still pretty shocking to win 3-0. I mean, that was what impressed me the most. I mean, I didn't see it live. I was late coming to it. I happened to flip on the highlights and I said, oh, I knew they'd at least been up early. Saw them and then it kind of goes on and you're like, what? Wait, they won 3 straight sets?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, to their benefit, I mean, the Americans really struggled with serving in the first set, and that really allowed the Canadians to get their footing, you know, get some confidence. And I mean, they won two of the sets 25-23. So right. I mean, like the point differential for the whole match was only about what, 8 points, 10 points. So I mean, that it shows you how close it can be. Like a 3-set victory doesn't necessarily mean that it was a blowout, right? And it was, but the Canadians got similarly yesterday. I mean, they credit to them. They hung in there for, you know, 2.5 sets with Brazil before, you know, before they really looked like the world's best team and took over. But, I mean, for people who have been watching the Maple Volleys, as they're known, for as long as they have, for them to come out and win their first 4 sets in Rio in that fashion, I think was just a really significant thing for a lot of people that are in this country's volleyball community.
Watching Brazil and their movement at the net, it's terrifying.
I mean, their serve and block game is just ridiculous. Like,
it's nuts. Well, and I just been on attack.
Well, I mean, everything they do is pretty impressive. But they're,
you know, there's like 4 guys. You know, I mean, they got everybody in the air at every ball. And the, you know, and everybody's decoying, and then they're like, "Here you go," and you know, I mean, the Canadians are good, and they know what they're doing, and they end up being like, "Whoa, that was an amazing, amazing thing to watch last night."
Yeah, no, it's I think it's good for volleyball in this country that there's an Olympic indoor team playing, and I think people are probably. That have really not had any reason to pay attention to that team are, you know, they've already kind of rallied behind them a little bit, but I think they're also getting exposed to actually how good, how much fun it is to watch volleyball live.
Great sport. Yeah. No, I didn't get to any UBC games this year, but generally I try to get to one or two men's or women's every year. Cause it's such a great live sport. I think the other thing that the change to the scoring system was such a great change, you know, made everything you can understand. Okay, you're how it works. It was such a fan friendly decision.
Yeah,
in both understanding, ease of understanding, and in terms of just how the game gets played. I think it changed the game in a way that was just perfect. I can't imagine. I can't really actually think of a better alteration to a game structure than what volleyball did with its scoring.
It's hard to believe that was almost 20 years ago now.
Is it that long ago?
It's been that long, yeah.
Wow. So most of our listeners don't even know what I'm talking about. All right, Eric. Great having you here as always.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Folks, we're on iTunes. Just search for Province Sports. You can find Eric on Twitter at Eric McKenzie. I'm at Rising Action. Of course, you can search for us on FeedBurner. We're on Stitcher and TuneIn. Links are all below. Province Sports Radio. ProvinceSports.com/radio. I haven't made that mistake in a while. Eric, we'll see you next week.
You bet.